The College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
And welcome to the College Football Podcast here on ESPN with Kirk Herbstreit and David Pollock. I'm your host, Kevin Nagandi. We will start out the gate. Let's just get this out of the way so I don't have to hear Pollock the entire podcast with his one-liners. But congratulations, Herbie, on the Bengals and Eagles tie. I will take that as a loss because that was
a total loss. Pollock, will you get to the bottom of NFL overtime? I mean, it makes no sense.
It's awful. It's ugly.
So many ties. To have OT is not to try to aim for a tie. We're trying to get a winner here.
Yep.
Hey, you know what? At this point, though, the Eagles will take ties. So ties are good for the Eagles, okay?
No. Listen, we wouldn't take it. That was ridiculous that they didn't go for it at the end. I was embarrassed.
Let me say this real quick. As a lifelong Bengals fan, and I tried to warn Pollock when he went there. I tried to warn Bill. I'm telling you, I try to warn everybody when they go. I did a feature on Burrow after the SEC game and the Heisman. Is that little window between that and the after the semifinal game against Oklahoma leading into the national title. And I was like, dude, I'm sorry, man. He goes, what do you mean? This is between interviews. He goes, wait a minute. I go, and he's from Southern Ohio. He gets it. I go, you're going to have to go to Cincinnati. And I go, it's like going to the black hole. And I don't even want to start with the offensive line and what you're going to be dealing with there. It's been fun watching you play in this offense and do your thing. And he kind of like laughed. And I was like, no, I'm not kidding at all. I feel so bad for him because that's the same guy that we watched last year. And now he's got, if we were doing one Mississippi, two Mississippi in the backyard, it's not even a, and he's getting rushed. I feel so bad for Joey Burrow.
It's not often that you go from your college team to your NFL team and play with less talent.
100%.
That's not usually the case.
Yeah. He took a nasty hit from Malik Jackson yesterday where I was like, any normal person's not coming back, at least for
a possession. I thought that was a broken collarbone for sure, at the very least. Oh, I couldn't believe that up from that.
All right, let's focus on the positive. Congrats on the Reds making the playoffs. I know you're feeling good about that as we get ready for baseball this week. That's a big deal. Big deal.
Okay, hold on. So we talked. We're talking Reds, but are y'all at least going to watch the NBA Finals or
are you going to watch?
Oh, okay. So now we watch the NBA Finals, Kurt. Now we're in.
No. I'm game seven of the NBA Finals. When that
what if it doesn't get to a game seven?
I didn't know we're in the NBA Finals yet. Are we in? I thought we were still in the semis.
Heat versus Lakers. Yeah, come on, man.
He sent the Celtics home. It's LeBron.
Isn't that a sweep for the Lakers?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not a sweep. No.
Okay.
The Heat have more ways to attack you and more players. Bam Adebayo's playing out of his mind. Dragic is playing great. Tyler Hero from Kentucky's balling. The Lakers are LeBron and AD are bust. So whenever they have bad games, they do lose. So I think it'll be fun. And the Miami versus LeBron will be fun. LeBron chasing MJ will be fun. There's a lot of dynamics. AD going for his first championship, and can he be the man? A lot of that's going to be fun to watch for some of us. But you know what? Let's just turn on the Reds and watch some baseball. Take a nap and. Yeah,
let the man enjoy the postseason a little bit. It's been a while. Let him enjoy that.
Oh, I'll be all over the baseball. I'll get in there. If LeBron's in the finals, I'll watch that a little bit.
Yeah. Well, all you need to know is when you look at the talent on the court, the top two players are LeBron and AD, and then after that, it's the Heat who have the advantage. I think this is a six-game series, but let's just move on. By the way, unique deal for you this past weekend for game day at home. You've done that before, but calling a primetime game with Fowler at home, clean broadcast, considering that is such a challenge at home to do in primetime. How are you feeling right now? And, what did you experience over the weekend? The dogs got some love, too. I love the puppies that were on the air on game day broadcast. What was that experience like for you on Saturday, Herbie?
I miss being there with David, Dez, and Reese, and our whole team. That was probably the hardest part with the guys because we had so much fun. You lay a rundown out, and so much of it is just impromptu moments that are very difficult to do with a two-second delay. So part was not fun. But overall, as far as the execution, the game is weird to call a game, off a monitor. You can do it, but you miss so much from being able to look at people and see things that, you know, the camera doesn't pick up or that with the viewers. But, you know, like you said, we were able to kind of pull our hybrid out, try to just keep it in the fairway, and hopefully did a good enough job. That was a blowout, and we can talk about that in a second. And then the other thing is I get a lot of people, you're soft. I can't believe you're giving in to this virus. How dare you? It's like, hey, bro, it's called policy protocol. You know, when you're a part of contact tracing, you really don't have much of a choice. If you follow your orders and you sit out for 14 days and away you go. You know, I mean, like, if one of you guys had it, most people in the world right now, if you did get in for contact tracing, why do you think these teams are canceling games? You think these players want to cancel games? No, they get into contact tracing. You don't have enough players to play. You follow protocol. And that's what ESPN and Disney have. They have a protocol. We follow it, and we do our best, and we keep moving on. That's the world we're in right now.
Yeah, and honestly, this is the protection of not just you, but everybody that you work with. And and honestly, it's challenging, but you couldn't tell. Congrats to Bill Bunnell and the entire broadcasting crew.
And that's what's crazy is you really couldn't tell unless you knew. I mean, yeah. It's unbelievable. Like that's unbelievable. It's a credit to them and the truck and everybody. That's insane that you could do that.
Yeah, the think about the technology, guys, and how far it's come, and the digital, you know, and the way the audio guys. We got a guy that's incredible that works in our truck that they're able to mix it. And like you said, the average viewer at home, if they didn't know that, they wouldn't have any idea. Chris was in the booth there in Miami, you know, and that it's watching baseball, NBA. I mean, there are a lot of different things that are going on, and we're very fortunate to have that. So we got through it, and we'll see where we are this week.
It's now time for the All-State Playoff Predictor segment with Kirk Herbstreit. Let's see where he thinks protection is going to really matter this weekend. And remember, get better protected with Allstate. You've never been in better hands.
You know, Kevin, every week we're going to be taking a look at the Allstate Playoff Predictor. The Allstate Playoff Predictor gives you a feel of the top teams and their chances of making the college football playoff. I'll be pointing out where protection could really change the game. And remember, get better protected with Allstate. You've never been in better hands.
Okay, it felt like this weekend was a little bit back to normal as we wait for the Big Ten and the Pac-12. Looking at the All-State Playoff Predictor right now, Ohio State is number one yet to play. They have a 69% chance to make the playoff. Alabama coming in at second at 68%. Clemson at 67%. Then you got Wisconsin there at 40%. And Texas surviving in Lubbock, sitting there at 2-0 at 28% to make the playoff. This is at least right now.
You know, I'm going to just rank my teams based on teams we've seen.
Yep.
And I'll get to teams like the Big Ten and the Pac-12 once they play. I said in the preseason, once the Big Ten came back, I thought Ohio State would play Clemson in the national title. I think Ohio State with Justin Fields is the team to beat. With that being said, I'm just going to rank the teams that we've seen. By the way, so much for SEC bias with ESPN. Look at the rankings with the Big Ten. They haven't even reported to camp yet. The Big Ten from the ESPN, FBI, that are ahead of teams that have played from the SEC. So, oh, well, there went that. All right, I'm going to put Clemson at one after watching these teams play. I'll put Bama, who, by the way, looks really good, at two. Florida Gators with Kyle Trask, I'll put at three. And you know what? I'm having fun at four. I'm going to put De'Aaron King and the Miami Hurricanes. I know that right now it's just one of those kind of years. I could put Mississippi State there at four. Why put a team that did, you know, like a C-plus game like a Georgia automatically there? I don't think this is one of those years that, well, I had them ranked there last week, so by gum, I'm going to keep them there because they found a way to win. This is too volatile this year. And so my rankings are going to represent the volatility of the season every week. And so right now I put Miami at four.
I like it, Herbie. Listen, it's 2020. There's nothing normal. So let's have fun at number four. Okay, and then let's talk about what we saw this past weekend.
Let's talk about where we saw this weekend. My goodness.
Yeah.
Now we're going to even get into this.
Yeah, and I want to say this. Like, we're still waiting, of course, for Pac-12 and the Big Ten and to fill the entire schedule up. But Saturday just there were a lot of things in that noon hour and that 3 o'clock hour, that 3:30 window where it was just like, okay, now it feels okay. But the one thing, I mean, the biggest winner of the week, we're going to start with the Pirate. And of course, Kansas State and Chris Klieman, what he had to deal with death issues related to COVID and to win in Norman. But the number, the air raid in the SEC is back. And this number, or these two numbers, I just focus on and I'm like, this is incredible. And that is 623 and 9. 623 yards from KJ Costello in that passing attack and Mike Leach, and 9 rushing yards total, you know, when you talk about the net, 9 rushing yards, and they go into Death Valley without the big fans, but they still beat an LSU team that's coming off the national championship that had not lost in 672 days. I looked it up. The last time LSU had lost a game was that 7 overtime game against Texas A&M. Remember that? That was in 2018. Yeah. And they go down. And it's just a huge credit to KJ Costello in coming into this and slinging it around 60 times. And Mike Leach saying, we're going to win my way. I do not care what conference and who I'm facing.
That's right. You got to start, don't you think, guys, with Mississippi State? I mean, we can talk about the defending champs and the concerns and where they go from here. But I you could feel through the TV the belief and swag of KJ Costello, who played at Stanford and had some ups and downs. And anytime you'd sit down getting ready to do a Stanford game, David Shaw, who's a straight shooter, you'd get him one-on-one. He'd kind of raise his eyebrows about KJ, and he'd be like, telling you now. I mean, this kid's special. This kid's got it. Then you'd watch the games, and, you know, Stanford's not quite where they were, obviously, when they had the Toby Garrett era, McCaffrey, Andrew Luck. And so you didn't quite see it there. Goes to Mississippi State, gets into this air raid, and he's been there and done that as far as executing in big games. And between his experience and fitting into that system and having playmakers around him, man, it was fun to watch. I mean, not for LSU, but for a college football fan. And LSU made that comeback, you know, late in that game, they got a sack and they got a fumble. And it's like, okay, all right, it's going to be one of those ugly wins. They survived in advance, but Costello, David, and Mississippi State and Mike Leach just dropping the hammer in their first game in the SEC.
And I think it was important, more important for anything, because I don't think anybody doubted Costello having success. And listen, nobody said he'd throw for 600, whether Derek Stingley was there or not. Throwing for 600 is throwing for 600. Very few people in the country have ever done that. I think there's like 6 or something like that, 6 in history of college football that have done that. I was impressed with the defense. You know, Mike Leach's defenses usually don't play very well, and they stunt like crazy, right? Now he's going to have more size and more athleticism. They run that 3-3-5, which is very unique to college football, by the way. I think there's 2 or 3 teams in the whole country that run that defense, and it really confused the crap out of LSU up front. Their offensive line didn't know what hit them. You know, very, very, very different to prepare for and who to identify as who and who are we double team and how do we get to the next level, and a lot of confusion for the other side of the ball. So I knew the Pirate would have good offense, but I think the confusion of defense was every bit as big of the story, because, Kirk, it's not like we thought LSU's offense would be great. I mean, I think this is going to be closer to what it's been in the past than it was last year this season because of so many pieces to replace, including your coordinator, including your Heisman Trophy winner and the best receiver in college football that just left. So I think there's so much to replace, but I think the confusion definitely messed them up. And in the past, what would LSU have been able to do? They'd have been able to pound the football down your throat, and especially against, you think, a 3-3-5 defense, but they weren't able to do that, and they kept getting the ball back. Mississippi State kept getting the ball back, making plays, even when they did have some turnovers and pick 6 and giving up the football. So I think the other side of the football surprised me just as much as the throwing for 600.
Yeah, Mississippi State had 4 turnovers and still threw for 6. I mean, incredible. We're going to celebrate them on Monday. But the first thing that I start to think about is, and respectfully to Little Dewey's in Starkville, Mike Leach and Mississippi State, their history is do that, lose to Arkansas, or lose to, or, you know, get up for Alabama. We're going to show them. We're going to Tuscaloosa, and then, you know, lose to Vandy when they play Vandy or Ole Miss. You know, those kind of games. So, let's get excited for them. I can't wait to watch them. You know, their next game at home against Arkansas. It's going to be great. But I don't know if this is a team that is just going to go right through the SEC. You know what I mean? I mean, that's not, you know, I think where we are right now. I'm excited for them, and especially their quarterback and their offense. But let's see where they go from here as far as handling the exposure and the big lights and everybody bragging about them. Are they a threat in the SEC? With that offense, they're one of those teams that's a threat every week. But do they have staying power to get through the gauntlet? I don't personally think they do.
Yeah, they got A&M on the 17th of October, then the bye, and then on the road in Tuscaloosa against Alabama on Halloween. Let's go to the other side, guys. We briefly brought it up, but LSU and Miles Brennan against that defense, he just looked like he wasn't ready for the moment. Any panic here when you look at the way this team is set up and they what three returning starters from that national championship team that played on Saturday, and of course the storyline of no Derek Stingley on the defensive side just because of the acute illness not related to COVID, but Brennan looked like he was overwhelmed the entire time. Is that just a 1 week thing looking at the 3-3-5 defense, or is this something of some concern? Because at one point we got used to 15 straight games of watching Burrow and Brady and that offense do whatever they wanted to do. And watching that game at a certain point, I was like, oh, this is LSU that we've seen pre-2019. This is where they don't have a quarterback answer. They don't have any consistency and they can't move drives, even though they have some players.
It's not fair. Like Kirk, we talked about this last year and we talked about coming into this season at Kirk, and we talked about everybody's going to look at LSU last year and go, dude, we're just going to spread you out and throw it around. And then our quarterback will scramble around and we'll throw it to our running back. And then we'll do, you know, we'll just do a little bit of everything and we'll do it fast. And we'll look to the sidelines and we'll get the calls and we'll go at it. And that wasn't normal last year. That you had a running back that fit Clyde Edwards-Helaire in any system and can break tackles and make people miss. You had a tight end. You had a huge tight end you could use in the passing game and the running game. You had multiple wide receivers that could win at every position. You had a quarterback that was an all-time like great. This was expected. This was 100% expected. We knew you could have come down to earth, and it's not just the system, it's the players. You can't replicate what you had. Miles Brennan, he can't do anything about it. He's not Joe Burrow. Nobody is, by the way. That's why he was the number one overall pick a year ago. So LSU's offense is going to be a heck of a lot closer to what we've seen in the past than what you saw in the recent past a year ago. And they're going to take their lumps and they're going to have to figure it out. And it's not going to be Kirk. It's not going to be overnight. It's going to be – and, by the way, we had all this offseason and all this drama and less time with your wide receivers and less time with your coaches. And you got two new coordinators on both sides of the ball. There's just a lot to – try to overcome very quickly.
Well, you and I, and I think people who really study the game, and you know, the three of us talk about this and live this, we can appreciate that and have patience and think what you just said. You know, one thing about Joe Burrow sitting down with him last year is he's like, man, I spent, you know, like 4 hours a day with Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson and Moss and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Marshall, and we could do these routes in our sleep, you know, because of how much time we spent together in April and May and June and July. By the time we got to camp, I didn't even care what coverage they were in. I knew where my guy was going. He knew where I was going. Full field progression read. Didn't matter what coverage you were in. I had an answer on every single throw. And as David said, that's not normal in college football. It's just, you don't see that. So to go from that, and we all bragged LSU, that was maybe the best team in the history of college football, best offense we've ever seen. Now, poor Miles Brennan, who grew up in that state, dreamed of one day putting that uniform on, was a, you know, an elite high school player. It's not like he's a walk-on. This guy's a great player. It just goes to, instead of me, my reaction to that was not, oh man, this guy's not any good. It was more of, if you needed more of a reason to appreciate who LSU was last year, this is back, not to where they were system-wise pre-2019. This is more of, this is normal. This is a young quarterback who's hesitant, unsure, and just waiting that extra hitch, or the, you know, holding on to that ball just a split second, that's now an incompletion, a tip ball, or an interception. Whereas Joe Burrow was boom, boom, boom. And it was like his ability to process boom, 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 ball, or boom, 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 they're all covered, check down to Clyde Edwards-Helaire, or boom, 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 they got Clyde, I'll take off for a scramble for 15. I mean, and then you throw in the tempo, the defense, their heads were spinning, and you just don't see it. So I want to give Miles Brennan and this offense a chance to just kind of get through a game or two. And you imagine the shoes that he stepped into in that stadium. That is tough. And now you got fans that are going to be like, oh, bah, this guy sucks. I mean, what are we doing with this guy? And, you know, they need to just take a deep breath and be realistic. Unfortunately, they can't do that. You know, fans can't do that. They want to see what they saw last year. And it may eventually get maybe not to that, but they might get to where they're executing better. But cut Miles Brennan some slack, man. That is a tough ask.
Yeah, it is.
Kiss your ring, bro. You got a championship ring. You're going to take your lumps this season. If you should have known that coming into the year. Kiss your daggum ring, because you still got a championship, and there's a lot of people that are jealous of that, bro.
And Joe Burrow, he looked at a defense, and he's like, all right, Clemson. All right, Alabama. All right, anybody. That's the coverage you're going to be in? Okay, I got one over here. I got two over here. I got six. You're going to leave six alone? He's 6'4". He was like the number one ranked high school receiver coming. You're going to leave him alone? All right. Well, go to him. Oh, you're going to leave the tight end one-on-one against his nickelback or against a backer? All right. Oh, you got a big old linebacker, 240 pounds, checking my back out of the backfield? I mean, he had freaks of nature. He had NFL talent through the roof. And nobody could check them. Alabama, Nick Saban's still trying to figure out how to stop that offense last year.
No doubt, special 12 months for LSU as they have to figure things out and on the fly in a pandemic and try to gel on offense with a ton of different personnel. And when you bring in the coaching staff, and Bo Pelini's already under fire on the defensive side. Speaking of under fire, a lot of Sooner fans waking up this week saying, what just happened? Not again. And that is Oklahoma, you know, blowing a big lead in Norman to an undermanned Kansas State team that dealt with a lot of adversity, considering the depth issues that they had. And Spencer Rattler had his first real pressure moment, and he struggled on the back end in that second half. Skylar Thompson, and a ton of credit to Chris Klieman and what he did. What do you make of what we saw in Oklahoma? And then, you know, Sooner fans after that getting their hopes up and watching what's going on in Lubbock with Texas, and then Texas coming back. I actually think that Texas win helps Oklahoma long term if they want to talk about the playoff when it comes to quality wins, because when you look around, the Big 12 is not helping themselves week in and week out. Herbie, let's start with you.
My thought is they're up 35-14, right? And I think that's what it was at one point. And it just looked like, you know, you have all these different games on. And you kind of put that one a little bit on the back burner, right? You got all these other games that you're watching, and all of a sudden they start to cut into the lead, and you're thinking, they're fine. You know, they're gonna, it's not looking pretty, but they're gonna be fine. Then there's a block punt, and you're like, what the heck is going on here? And then it just had that weird feeling. I think it's 4 out of 5 years now they've lost to a team that's been unranked, and it started to kind of have that feel to it, and Spencer Rattler, just like Miles Brennan, I'm not going to write him off, but it was our first chance to kind of see how he would do in this situation. You got to talk about the OU defense, like always, you know, the tackling or the lack thereof, situational awareness, you know, with a big lead like that. Man, there's just so much to get into here. I would think if I were an OU fan, I'd be more concerned with inability to close out a game because they had a 35-14 lead. And again, you got to go back to the drawing board and be concerned about OU's defense. Those are the two things, OU's defense and Rattler throwing the three picks. And when he really got into the heat of things, how did he perform? How did he look? Because those last three guys that have played before him, that's when they, you know, typically was when they got that pressure. So, there's a lot there, David. And K-State, you know, David, you talked about Deuce Vaughn, and you know, he ran a few, but it was really more him out of the backfield catching the football. I think he had four catches over 100 yards. So OU defense continues to be a mystery.
Yeah, and you called, you nailed Spencer Rattler, and you talked about on game day the past couple of weeks, you want to see him under fire. And listen, death, taxes, OU defense stinks. Like this, these are things that come to fruition every single year. Here's the thing: 0 points in the fourth quarter for OU's offense, and we can lay this at the feet of the defense. You can't get outscored to end the game 20-0. You can't. I mean, you can't do that. You have to be able to answer the bell. And by the way, Spencer Rattler, even his last pick on the last possession, guy was open. He had a chance to make a play. It was a bad throw. I like the way he scrambles. I like the way he can make plays off platform. And he made some plays that are phenomenal. But you could tell there's going to be some mistakes that come along with it. And, you know, he's so efficient most of the time. And then those two or three balls that he's throwing that are sailing, those two or three balls that are inaccurate that are getting turned over, you can't do that. You can't make those mistakes. He made those mistakes. But again, last year lost to Kansas State. Year before that, you lose to Iowa State. Year before that, you lose to Texas. I mean, you just, to be a great team, to take this next step, Lincoln Riley and these guys, they can't keep tripping in these against unranked teams. When you just look at the team and you go, how the heck does that happen?
They got Iowa State Saturday night on ABC. And then after that, Texas. And that brings us back to, you know, the general question of Texas here. And I don't know how they blew the lead. I don't know how they came back. It's just Big 12. I mean, this is just how it is in Lubbock. And for them to get the gift that they got on the onside. And it's a credit to Ellinger and the offense not giving up. But my goodness, the Big 12, they didn't do themselves any favor in the opening weekend because it became a Sun Belt showcase. And then, you know, when you see this, the two powers, Oklahoma and Texas, struggle, and in a year where David's, you know, pushing the idea of expansion, we are going to see a team or two that's potentially could have two losses getting in the conversation and play only eight to nine games, right? I mean, that's the way this is shaking out.
You know, and we'll see how Texas, you know, they won the game. It was ugly as it could be. They won the game. And we'll see what they do from here. But what this does with the Big 12 and the way they've looked and how erratic they've been, you know, I think it opens up the discussion about Group of Five. I think it opens up the discussion about, I know the Pac-12 has a limited resume and schedule, but if you got a team out there that got red hot and was blowing people out and taking names, I think it opens the door for them. I think people, whether we like to admit this or not, this sometimes weighs in on people and their evaluation when it comes to the committee is like I talked last week about UCF. You know, the 2020 UCF team will benefit from the 2016 and 18 and 19 teams. Same way, I think people are tired of seeing a Big 12 team go to the semifinal and get undressed and get embarrassed. And I think on top of that, when you start to see winning 63-56, you know, against a Texas Tech team, and, you know, who'd they play, Houston Baptist or somebody like that?
And they won by two. Yep.
It's just the optics of the Big 12 are as bad as they can be in these first two or three weeks of the season. And I just think that, you know, who knows, maybe somebody will right the ship and get hot and take care of business. But I just think that, David, there's potentially openings for either two teams from an SEC or Big 10, or the possibility of a UCF or a Cincinnati or whoever it might be, BYU. I know they don't get to play anybody. But again, 2020, we keep saying, is one of those years that's going to be crazy. The Big 12 may be working themselves out of the playoff.
No love for all those mentions, Kirk, and no love for Miami or two teams from the ACC, huh?
No. I mean, that's a fair point.
That's what's even scarier if I'm a Big 12 fan, is it's just – yeah. And again, I can go down the list. I mean, Oklahoma State, maybe their defense is for real and they show you. But offensively, how for real are they? Can they continue to be a contender? But, man, I was just disappointed in watching Texas defense again, man. We've done the switch and we've done the injuries thing as the reason. And we've done the coordinator thing as the reason. Like, I mean, it's just bad. So that was really frustrating to watch because, again, college football in today's era, like you play so many diverse sets of offense or offenses, so many teams that can beat you different ways and that can compromise you. At some point, yeah, you got to be able to score points, but your defense, you at least have to make things hard for offenses. And, you know, it's frustrating to watch. And listen, it's frustrating. I didn't think Iowa State looked great, by the way, by any stretch of the imagination. So I don't think the Big 12, you know, had a strong showing for the start of the season a couple weeks ago. And then I don't think they did themselves any favors this past week, but Kev, you're exactly right, man. Texas needed to win for Oklahoma. Oklahoma's mm-hmm. done this before. We've also seen them rally before, by the way, and win the rest of their games and get in the playoffs. And again, nothing's good happened out of it. They get destroyed in the playoffs, but we've seen them rally and still make it, you know, make a season of it. And they just had that one blemish. So I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility still.
It was nice to see Alabama, at least some normalcy where you're like, okay, all right, we can count on this. We can count on Najee Harris. We can count on Jalen Waddle, Mac Jones looking comfortable against Mizzou, and that consistency. And I was looking for Dylan Moses in that defense just because missing him last year and how physical they are. At Florida, to me, Kyle Pitts is just put him on an island and good luck trying to cover him, right? I mean, Trask and Pitts were on the same page, but it just felt like there was not one person on the other side on defense, and Florida knew it, and they told Ole Miss, match up with Kyle Pitts. We're going to find a way to get him the ball, and he's going to score. Trask looked fantastic. And again, it is a slow start in the sense of, all right, you're trying to figure things out. You don't want to jump to conclusions. But Alabama and Florida look like the cream of the crop. On the other side, when you see the Georgia struggles out the gate at quarterback and Texas A&M, still not really right. There were some scores at 7-5 at halftime, and you're like, what the heck is going on? What was your assessment, Herbie, of how Florida and Alabama came out the gate? And then I want to get Pollock's thoughts on what's going on in Georgia in the quarterback position with DeJuan Mathis and Stetson Bennett.
Yeah, I'd like to hear what the latest is with JT Daniels, because I think people underestimate what he can do. I mean, David was talking a lot about Mathis, and I know he looked good in practice, but he looked like a guy that has all this talent, but the game is just moving a little bit too fast for him, at least in that one game. Because at the end of the day, no matter how pretty you are and how talented you are, it still comes down to decision making and ability to process and throw the ball out there accurately. And JT Daniels has proven he may not have the ability to create, but at least he's going to distribute the ball and make good decisions and get it out there. So I don't know the latest. I have no idea if he's even playing this year, but if he did, that would be a viable option for them down the road. Florida, to me, Florida is a great example of Dan Mullen, how good a quarterback coach he is. I go back to when Felipe Franks, with all that hype last year, was their guy, and then he got dinged and he had to go out. And they were like, oh, this Kyle Trask guy, I don't know much about him. The last time he started was in like ninth grade. And all he did was try not to do too much. Dan Mullen would say, here's your deal. This play, ABC. And he was like, yes, sir, ABC. And he didn't look pretty doing it. And he just followed the coaching advice and the guidelines, stayed within the structure of the offense, and just was like, boom. By the way, he's got a few players to throw the ball to, right? My job's to throw that guy right there. Boom. Okay, he's covered. Check it down over here. I got that. Like, he's the epitome of, you don't have to be an elite five-star all-world guy that's on Instagram and all this stuff. He's just a guy that's probably, if you look right now, he's in the film room. If we call down to Florida, hey, Dan, what's Trask doing right now? He's like, oh, hold on, let me get him. I got to pull him out of the film room. He's that kind of guy. So by the time he gets to Saturday, he doesn't make a lot of mistakes. And you throw in Dan Mullen in their system and a lot of talented players around him, and they're going to be a tough out for whoever they play. I thought Bama looked like Alabama, right? I mean, they didn't play maybe a team that could challenge him. But I think the people that think Mac Jones is limited, if the way he played when he got chances last year and in this game, I don't know what the kid has to do for people to be over, oh, Mac Jones. I mean, you think they would recruit him to play at Alabama if he couldn't play? So I thought he's doing a really good job, and we were reminded how uberly talented Jalen Waddle is. So I think Bama's just being Alabama, and I'm very excited to hear David's thoughts about Georgia and what he saw and where they go from here with the offense?
Well, I think first of all, Mac Jones, it's the same thing as your Miles Brennan a little bit. Look who you're following, and look at the excitement that Tua brought, and they brought the offense out of the Stone Ages, and it was just exciting to watch them throw the football all over the place, and I think people fell in love with that. Najee Harris is going to do his thing. He is going to be awesome, and he's finally learned, Kirk. He didn't learn how to. He really didn't know how to hit holes. He was always uber talented. We saw that as a freshman. You know, you could see spurts where you're like, my God, he's got some gifts, but didn't really put it all together. He's put it all together, and he's going to be an absolute force. The defense did look better. Florida looked like the cream of the crop in the SEC East by far. I mean, you just watch that offense, and it was surgical, and it was weapons, and I think Malik at running back is going to be really, really good. I'd be curious to see if they can continue to run the football, but when you got a quarterback you trust and can do that, it's going to be good. So it's obviously a great start for Florida. You know what? The Mathis thing was intriguing because you saw a big, beautiful human being that, and I say that, I mean 6'6", long strides, athlete. You saw some quarterback draw, some quarterback run, and it wasn't clean. But Kirk, he took a shot on the sidelines. By the way, it was his fault he took the shot. He didn't run out of bounds. Bumper pull about broke him in half. And he wasn't the same kid after that. And that's what's going to happen. That's what you're going to find out. And you know this, Kirk, Kevin, I mean, you get thrown in the fire and you get knocked in your face and things start to speed up and you better be able to adjust to it. By the way, I mean, when you're Georgia and you're looking at how it went and you're looking at who gives you the best chance to win, dude, Stetson Bennett came in and went 20 of 29 and righted the ship and smoothed them out. And it was without him, you don't know what would have happened. But Mathis has a exceptionally bright future. JT Daniels, to answer your question, Kirk, he's not cleared yet medically. And they don't know when that's going to happen. And it could be a couple weeks. It could be the whole season where he doesn't come back and he doesn't get to play. But Georgia's defense looked like Georgia's defense. Their special teams looked really, really good in the return game. You know, they created turnovers defensively. I think they got a shot to be good. But, you know, Stetson Bennett isn't the answer in the long-term future. You know, Mathis is going to have to be a guy that continues to grow, continues to settle in. He's going to make mistakes. And by the way, Kirk, if we go back to Justin Fields last year at the beginning of the season, he was along for the ride with Ohio State. It wasn't – he wasn't making – perfect reads on the zone read, but my God, he was so good that it didn't really matter. And they were so good that it didn't really matter. But by the end of the season, he was a thoroughbred and he was dialed in and he knew, and he's got, by the way, he's got the best offensive play caller, you know, second or third best offensive play caller with Ryan Day in all of college football. How disappointing was watching Georgia's new offensive rhythm, Georgia's new offensive flow, Georgia's new offensive coordinator. Like if you're going to come in and change this offense, the first thing I should do is make it comfortable for my quarterback. They didn't do a really good job of that. So many daggum penalties after penalties after penalties. It was as sloppy and as discouraging as I could be as a Georgia fan and as a guy that watched the school and it was excited to do. You're sitting there watching it going, oh my gosh, this is a mess. And that's probably how people across the country felt about Georgia watching the game.
Yeah. What about the red britches? What do you think of those?
Oh, that's ballsy. That's ballsy, bro. Last time they wore that was the national championship year with Herschel.
That's what I thought. I wondered if they'd worn them since then.
No, they haven't worn those since the national championship game since the national championship year with Herschel. You know, it was okay, but man,
I don't mind them. I kind of like them, but that's you know how college football is when Notre Dame wears those green mm-hmm. jerseys, or you know, Georgia wore black jerseys and lost by 100 to Alabama, like. People, fans, like they're very sensitive to certain uniform tweaks, and
The silver britches are something that like Georgia fans take a lot of pride in. Like that's a lot.
Oh yeah,
they love their silver britches. But hey, listen, sure. I'm all for it, bro. I'm all for uniform changes. Listen, we go to concerts and J Lo changes 75 times at a halftime. You know what I'm saying? So I'm good with uniform changes. And because here's the thing, like Kirk, I remember, and this was 2001 through 2005. We begged Mark Richt for black cleats. Like we had to beg for cleats, for God's sakes. Like, can we please change our cleats? Like We look faster with white cleats. We look faster with black cleats. We would love to see black, and we couldn't get it. Like, and now you see the uniform changes every week and all the craziness that goes with it. But whatever creates excitement, whatever the guys rally around, when it's 7-5 at the half and your offense looks like that, I might retire them quickly, immediately.
I'm with you. You mentioned J-Lo. She's winning on the stage each and every outfit change. If you're not looking pretty in the uniform, then it's just like, go back to the silver britches. At one point, I was like, why do they do this change? Because we've seen them change those uniforms before. You make the reference to when they got smoked before, when they went to the blacks. And I was like, no more. Just go back to the silvers. The big story and the big question is, between the hedges and primetime, they've got Auburn coming to town. What concerns do you have here when you talk about Todd Monken and this offense and who's playing quarterback in a game like this in prime time? Pollock, let's start with you.
I have concerns about what I saw last week, and you talk about wholesale changes and you talk about having an identity. Last year, Georgia's offense did not have much of an identity, and this year's offense it's one game, Kirk. I mean, listen, we had a long layoff, and Jamie Newman was supposed to be the guy, and you know, JT's not even an option. And so you're starting guys you're starting a guy that's never played a snap in college football. Okay. He's never been a part of that. That's, you're going to take some lumps with it, but I didn't like the direction of by the way, if I got George Pick, I'm throwing 17 jump balls a game. Okay. I don't give a crap. I get single coverage. I don't have a safety over the top. The play call is number one. Just hold up number one and throw him the football. So I got concerns about the offensive line is all rebuilding and retooling. The only guys really with any experience that have played a lot, really it's just Ben Cleveland who's played a ton of football, up front in their specific spot. So I think I have concerns about their offense. But, I'll tell you this. I didn't think Auburn's offense looked great either. You know, I thought Seth Williams had a heck of a day, and he's a problem. Like, matching up with that big cat's a problem with George Pickens. But, going into the offensive feel for both sides, I think is still very inconsistent, but I tell you what, Georgia's defense, Kirk, they look good to me. They look good. They look like they did a year ago.
Yeah. I'm with you. Their defense is basically going to keep them in almost any game that they play. Right. It's just a matter of when you're searching for an identity, it makes it really hard on a play caller because you don't know what you can hang your hat on. And now you got to go up against Kevin Steele, who lost a lot of talent, but Kevin Steele has a lot of credibility in that SEC within the coaching fraternity because he's lost good people in the past, and his scheme allows him to still be pretty creative and still be pretty talented and good. I mean, he's going to keep most people he plays right around 20 points or less. So I think both these defenses are going to really shine on Saturday night. I think it's going to be a matter of, I know it sounds old school, but I do think this is more of a kind of a throwback, kind of the opposite of Mississippi State and LSU. I think this will be more of like what you expect from SEC football with the defenses and the way they can maybe control things. I'd love to see Georgia get their running game going a little bit more. We're talking so much about the quarterback and the passing game, but I think Georgia, the DNA of that program and the culture, they need to spread it out, sure, but they got to control the line of scrimmage. You're always going to have talented backs there. I wouldn't be surprised to see them, especially if the quarterbacks they don't quite trust yet, get back to running the ball, get back to play action off of that run game and try to be more efficient. They had 12 penalties last week. It's just not Georgia football, and it's a one game, middle of COVID. That's why I think we can't really jump up and down on any of these teams. It's the first time they play, right? Mm-hmm. So let's see where they are week two. But boy, what an interesting matchup for two teams in Georgia and Auburn. Usually a game that's played, when is it, like week 10, week 9 or 10?
Yeah, late November. Way late in the season.
Here we are, week two, a big rivalry game. So be a fun one to watch and see which way it goes.
And that is going to be the showcase game this weekend. In 2 weeks, our showcase game, I can't wait, will be, of course, Miami at Clemson. Herbie, you've called it back-to-back weeks. And Pollock, you were in Miami this past weekend. Before we wrap things up, I'm glad, Herbie, you mentioned that they should be a top 10 team. They are. They're number 8 in the country. Where is the ceiling here for this Miami team after watching them the last 2 weeks as they get ready with the bye here and then Clemson?
Well, I don't think at this point, I mean, you know, take them out of the last 2 weeks. You know, they played Louisville and they played a really bad Florida State team. And, you know, now you're trying to compare them to Alabama. Like, and when you start taking them out of the 13th or 15th ranking, and now you go, all right, let's put them in there with Clemson and Alabama and Florida and Ohio State and teams up there. You know, they'd be the first ones to tell you, you know, we'll find out. We got 2 weeks to get ready. We're going to find out how good we really are when they go to Death Valley. That's the great thing about this is, man, you talk about a stock that's soaring. It's De'Aaron King and Rhett Lashley in that offense. And, you know, they got enough on defense. They got enough pieces on defense that make you kind of raise your eyebrow and say, you know what, they got some people over here that can play. But again, Louisville and it's Florida State. And they passed both those tests, flying colors. And now we're going to find out. Well, you know, October 10th at Death Valley, that'll be an ABC, I'm assuming an ABC Saturday night game. And it's a big stage, and it's the big boys, the Clemson Tigers, who are sitting there watching them play these games. And it's Trevor Lawrence, and it's, you know, it's a lot of great players. So they look good, man. I'm fired up about them. De'Aaron King, I love his humility. I love the way he carries himself. I think his personality is rubbing off on the offense. Love their backs. I mean, they can come at you with three different backs.
Yeah.
Receivers played a lot better last week as a group, minus, you know, we knew about Jordan and Mowry, the tight ends, but I thought Harley and that group played better. So there's a lot to be excited about, but we'll find out in 2 weeks how far they've really come when they play Clemson.
And here's what's most exciting to me. Like, De'Aaron King has always been a really good athlete. And actually, no, let me rephrase that. He's a freak. He's an elite athlete. He's different. He's special. He's always had a snap release, a quick release, a strong arm. UAB week one was the game plan. Can De'Aaron King beat me, right? Like, what's my game? Actually, week one, can I get him to the ground? Can I pressure him? You know, can I make life hard on him? Okay, he can take off and scramble. You know, week two, second game, we get to see De'Aaron King against Louisville. We're going to drop eight, and we're going to make you play the quarterback position. We're going to make you complete passes and tight windows and throws, read defenses, and make you and see if you can do that consistently. And he could. Last week, same thing, bro. Whatever you're giving him now, he's got the answers. That's some scary crap, man. It's not going to be fun to play him. Clemson's got some elite players, and up front, they can probably, you know, dominate the line of scrimmage. But again, they can dominate this line of scrimmage and be as great as they want, i.e. see Lamar Jackson several years ago. He can still make plays. And that's what's going to be fun. This atmosphere, by the way, Death Valley, it ain't what it usually is, Kurt. We know that. That place is usually ridiculous. One of the most insane atmospheres in all of college football. So it's going to be exciting, but it's just fun to watch De'Aaron King having the answers now to his offense, because this offense now is a problem for everybody.
Can't wait. Looking forward to that in a couple weeks. Looking forward to you guys later on this week, of course, as you take your trip to David's neighborhood. And David just gets to sleep in his own house and enjoy it. No traveling and no book club reading inside the hotel. So that'll be fun.
You know what,
though?
You know what was great this past week, Kev? I'm in the hotel, first of all. Best hotel situation we've ever had in Miami. It was unbelievable.
Oh, and really?
I was trying to figure out why. Why do I have a suite with like two bedrooms? I got a full kitchen, bro.
I know where he's going.
I got an oven, a microwave. I got a big refrigerator the size of my house refrigerator. And then I was like, Kirk's not on the road. They had an extra room, so they gave me Kirk's room. It was beautiful, bro. It was a game changer, homie. It was ridiculous. It was the best spot I've ever stayed in my life.
You ain't right.
hey, Herbie, at least you didn't have to sweat it out there on the set.
Oh my God. I had a lot of fun with that, but I wasn't happy I wasn't a game day in person, but I was very happy that the 1 week where I had to be out, it was where I would have been. And when I saw Pollock, what I love about Pollock, I call Pollock three technique. What I love about Pollock, somebody sweats his butt off and doesn't even care or think about like toweling down. It's falling off his head. He's just mid-thought breaking down what's going on with LSU. And I'll tell you this, and I'm looking at him at home, and I'm like, my man is sweating and doesn't even care. Doesn't care. I'm always like so conscious of like, oh man, I'm sweating. Oh yeah. And because it could be 62 and I'm over there sweating in the corner with my AC unit.
He's got the AC unit on it when we're in Minnesota, for God's sakes. He's still got the AC unit on. It's the most insane thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. When I saw Pollock and especially Dez had just a little bit of moisture on his brow, I was like, oh my God. I see moisture on Dez's brow. I would have been a puddle. And of course,
yes.
There with his sweaty shirt. That was fun.
Dez during commercial breaks was dropping down and putting his head in front of the AC unit.
Wow.
Dez is from South Florida. I mean, he should be used to it, but you can't get used to that humidity.
It's one thing when you're walking around in your gear and you're just hanging out. You care about sweating, but when you put a suit and tie on up around your neck, you know how it is. And
yeah, and you got the lights. You're right. Lights
on, and it's just, you know, you're trying to look professional, and you know, it's not fun.
Well, I hope you can get back on the road soon. I can tell you one thing: with my Phillies just falling apart, I'm rooting for the Reds on Wednesday against the Braves because, you know, the Braves are our rivals. So I'm all about that. And we don't even need to talk about the football team in Philadelphia. So with that, let's wrap things up, guys. Have a good week. Looking forward to game day on Saturday, and of course the call between the hedges in Pollock's backyard with Georgia and Auburn. Thank you, guys.
All right, guys. Have a good week.
See you, dudes.
And big thanks, of course, to Herb Street and Pollock here on the podcast. Again, some sense of normalcy this past weekend. And it's only going to get better and better as we remain cautiously optimistic here on the podcast. Of course, Taylor Schwenk on the other side coordinating three locations each and every podcast for us as we all call in and find a way to get this this podcast to you two or three times a week. It's just great to have Taylor there on the other side, especially dealing with Pollock behind the scenes. I will tell you that later on the week we'll have Pollock, and I promised it last week with Ryan McGee. We will have Ryan McGee later on this week to talk about his bottom 10 and a new book coming out by McGee. Love the guy. He always has great insight. He looks at the college football world from a different viewpoint that's always beneficial for us, the listener. So looking forward to that. Stay safe, social distance, wear a mask. Talk to you soon.